Welcome to the Oldie of the Year, presented by Giles Brandeth, featuring Olivia de Havilland, Jeremy Hutchinson, Aung San Suu Kyi, Molly Meacher, Timothy West and Prunella Scales, Robert Hardy, Jermaine Greer, Don McCullen, Lady Colin Campbell, and Leon and June. Brought to you by Bailey Gifford. One oldie looking after another.
This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Oldie of the Year Awards lunch. Yes, you are here, and it's very exciting that you are here, and I'd like to congratulate those of you who are of riper years on remembering to come, and I'd like those of you who had tickets having brought them on remembering where you'd left them, because I can't remember where I have left anything at any time. But my friend Alexander Chancellor has come up with a brilliant notion, and I'm going to implement it, because I spend most of my life going up and downstairs, because downstairs I can remember what I want. I get upstairs and I can't remember what it was. I go downstairs again. Of course, that's what it was. I go back upstairs. I remember immediately. And then I go down. No, what was it? Anyway, I'm going up and down the stairs like a yo-yo. I'm suffering from déjà vu, at the same time as all sorts of other things. It's ghastly. But the problem is now solved, thanks to Alexander. I'm going to take up the offer from the Stanner Stairlifts, and I'm going to attach to the stairlift an old-fashioned tape recorder. I'm going to sit in the tape recorder at the bottom of the stairs, press the two buttons, and tell myself why I am going upstairs. I'm then going to go up the stairs and play it back, and I will then know why I am there. I know why I am here. I am here to introduce to you some extraordinary people. 11 of them in all. They are the recipients of this year's Oldie of the Year Awards. We gathered the judges late last year, a group of distinguished people led by our editor Alexander Chancellor, James Pembroke, the publisher of the magazine, a team of writers including the inimitable Craig Brown, who in my view is somebody who has consistently made me laugh as a writer. He has done amazing work throughout my adult life, and yet he is so young. Can we just salute him because he's here? And he's just, he's a writer of genius. He also was on the team with Roger Lewis, about whom you're going to be hearing more a little later on, and for a reason. Roger Lewis was on the team. We had Libby Purvis on the team as well. Libby couldn't be with us today because she's on a cruise trip. Because she sat next to the sponsors at the last lunch, and that was sort of... why not? There's got to be a reason for coming to these dues. We also had, as one of the judges, the man who has won more BAFTAs than any other person in the history of British television, John Lloyd, CBE, who is here today. Yeah. I think those were all the judges. Anyway, lots of interesting nominations, and some remarkable people came up. Not everybody was eligible. One of my favorite candidates for an award was one of my favorite actors, who is here, and I'll be introducing you to him later. He didn't quite get the award because actually he's not really eligible, but I wanted to give him one. So let's begin to tell you who has won which award. By happy chance, the first award winner features on the front page of The Guardian, not a newspaper with which Alexander is familiar, but it's still going, bless his heart. The person on the front page of The Guardian is so attractive she could almost be on the front page of The Telegraph. But anyway, she is the extraordinary, and I must pronounce the name right, Aung San Suu Kyi. That is the correct pronunciation. I rehearsed it on Google earlier today. And she has won our special award as our Democrat of the Year. She can't be here because she is actually in Myanmar, which is a country, not... that's where she is. And having been 25 years a house prisoner, having had an extraordinary time, she is now free and is a phenomenon. Anyway, we wanted her to be our Democrat of the Year, and we got in touch with her, and to our amazement, she wrote back saying, "This is what I want. It has been one of my..." This is from the office of the NLD chairperson, Bahan Township, Rangoon, to Mr. Giles Brandreth. Yeah. "Dear Mr. Brandreth, you may be surprised to know that I am delighted to be an Oldie of the Year. I accept with pleasure. I cannot be with you in person because of events at home. I must admit that I have not had much time recently to reflect on what it means to be old. I was fortunate to have been able to enjoy a retirement experience somewhat earlier than most." This has not been written by Craig. This is genuinely her letter. And I think she's about 75, isn't she? Anyway, on we go. "But after rather too many years of quiet contemplation, where my main activities were reading, listening to the radio, brackets, that's how I know who you are, close brackets, seeing very few friends, and barely leaving home, I'm now more than happy to be back at work. It is said that new experiences keep one young, and perhaps that's another reason why I've not given much thought to the matter of age. Last November, for the very first time in my life, I was able to vote in a general election. Please ponder that, Mr. Brandreth." Which is interesting. "Last November, for the very first time in my life, I was able to vote in a general election." And this is a lady in her 70s. "This year, I'm looking forward to a new challenge as my party and I take on the responsibilities of government for the first time. We owe our success in the recent elections to the unwavering determination of our people, young and old alike, to bring about change. In the coming years, I hope that you can support us in our efforts to bring about a peaceful and prosperous future for the people of Burma, as you still call our country. And may find our roads when you come. I would like you to come. Please do come. You will find our roads rather bumpy and our electricity temperamental at times. But the veneration of age in Burmese culture will guarantee every oldie a particularly warm and generous welcome. Thank you." We go from a Democrat of the Year from the other side of the world to a remarkable Democrat on this side of the world. And I'm just going to read to you, since we're into the Guardian zone, what Michael White, in the new edition of The Oldie, has to say about our Campaigner of the Year. "Campaigner of the Year," and don't applaud until she gets to her feet, she's here and she's with us, "Campaigner of the Year, Molly Meacher, 75. Delivered a useful lesson in bold parliamentary manoeuvres to whippersnapper statesmen last October. She tabled a successful Lord's Amendment which forced George Osborne, 44, to back down over tax credit changes, for which she was widely applauded as the Oldie Campaigner of the Year." Now, what's interesting about this lady you're going to meet now, Baroness Meacher, Molly Meacher, is that this is a public manifestation of what she has achieved. I happen to know, she's a crossbencher, that over a lifetime she has been campaigning for causes that don't attract much publicity or attention. She is rewarded by being the only person in the House of Lords who's given an office because she deserves it. The front benchers, of course, they have it. The whips, they have it. She is the only crossbencher who deserves an office because she is somebody who's a politician who doesn't just make a noise, she makes a difference. Would you please salute the Oldie Campaigner of the Year, Lady Meacher?
Well, what can I say? This is the most extraordinary treat for me and an absolute surprise. You know, when I tabled that motion to this regulation, deadly boring document, It never occurred to me that we'd finish up with the Prime Minister thumping his fist on the table over what I'd done, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer accusing me of causing a constitutional crisis, my God. In fact, it was the Chancellor of the Exchequer who caused a crisis, because he tried to tuck away in this little regulation a cut of £4.4 billion to people's benefits, working-age people's benefits. And he didn't think he'd get found out. And I have to confess to you, I wasn't the one who found it out. Somebody else did. But I did do the business, as they say. Only because I couldn't find anyone else willing to do it. But I have to tell you, the pressure that came down from number 10 and number 11 through the powers that be in the House of Lords was something I've never experienced and would not wish to experience again. I had demands from two fairly senior ministers to go and see them, to have pressure exerted upon me to withdraw this thing. And then I had calls from the government chief whip to go and see him and have pressure exerted upon me. And I have to say, it was quite something. The sort of things he'd say is, do you realise, Molly, if you pursue this, you could bring down the House of Lords. The government may just destroy the House of Lords if you carry on. And I thought, well, actually, not a bad idea. You know, if we can't do anything, we might as well not be here, actually. So there we are. But I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody involved in producing The Oldie for producing such an amazing journal. So thoughtful, thought-provoking, stimulating. I was just saying, it's not just for us, we oldies. It's actually surely for everybody, isn't it? So thank you so much for all your work, and thank you for making me feel a little bit special just today. Thank you.
We have a double act accepting the next award. I'm particularly excited about this because these are two of my favourite actors. I remember first seeing Timothy West years and years ago as Thomas Beecham and thinking this man is extraordinary. He just embodies Beecham. Whether it's Beecham, whether it's Edward VII, whether it was about 18 months ago I saw his King Lear, deeply moving. He is a remarkable actor. And he's married to another remarkable actor. I still call them actresses, but I want to make everyone feel comfortable. This is an inclusive occasion. So she can define what she is. But Prunella Scales is somebody who, just for all of us in this room, has been part and parcel of our lives, part of our funny bones since we first saw her in Fawlty Towers. But since we've seen her, whatever she's done, when I saw her on stage as the Queen, I thought, this is the person who is like the Queen. Excellent as Helen Mirren was and is, Prunella Scales was the real thing. And now I've started watching a television series in which Timothy West and Prunella Scales go on a barge, and it's their lifelong love, and they potter about the United Kingdom. And the series has been so successful that it's now going to go, they're going to be going on the same old barge, but along the canals of Venice. So clearly they've got an audience and they've got a budget, and it's fantastic. And if you've seen this series, you will find it just so charming, because here are two wonderful people that we know, and as we watch them, we realise we love them because we see them loving one another. And to see a couple so easy and so happy in each other's company is a cause for envy in some cases, but admiration in all. These clearly are lovely people, and they demonstrate the power of love. So, in the spirit of love, we salute them as our bargees of the year. It is indeed Timothy West and Prunella Scales.
Thank you. Of course, you've got the title wrong. It's not a barge, it's a narrow boat. But we're enormously grateful for this award. I mean, we've never been the best of anything, have we, over any year? I don't think so. But We're grateful because when you get to be in your 80s and you haven't been given a knighthood or a damehood, and you haven't won a BAFTA, there's a real danger that you might be classified as a national what do they call a national no, come on. Yes, that too. The phrase I was looking for was a national treasure, you know. The national treasure, that forlorn, half-lit person who stands amid a lot of old theatre programmes and piles of copies of The Oldie and even of the magazine called... Peers of the Giles knows, Peers, P-I-E-R-S, of Great Britain. So we're very, very grateful, and it is wonderful to be here among so many friends and so many people that we thought were friends and thought we might never see again, and we have, and that's delicious. And it's great to be recognised by this magazine, which we like so much and admire so much and read so much and are among so many, many lovely people. So thank you, and it's been a wonderful lunch.
Now, on we go now. We come now to an interesting award, exciting and worthwhile. This is called Iconoclast of the Year. And this is for somebody who's been, again, part of our lives for a lifetime, but is a most remarkable human being. In Who's Who, her entry reads, recreations none, but she does declare, I do everything with all my might and main. She's a formidable figure in the sense that she's got a wonderful mind, she is beautiful, she is brilliant. And this past year, she's sent some things that in some quarters are regarded as contentious about the whole transgender issue. We're all mid-gender now, I appreciate that. And I have an interest in transgender matters because when I was a Member of Parliament, almost the first person to come to see me in my surgery was a late middle-aged man dressed in a frock, wearing a beret, who came with his elderly mother wanting a gender realignment on the national health. And I listened to his story, and I was sympathetic to him. And he came to see me week after week, and eventually we managed to secure for him a gender realignment operation, which was very successful. He looks exactly the same, it must be said. But he and his mother tell me they are much happier, which is marvelous. The downside of this was that word went round that I was the go-to guy for gender realignment. So if any of you are on the cusp and thinking, you know, looking forward to the snip-snip and enjoying the new freedoms, I don't know, come and see me afterwards and I'll try and point you in the right direction. And that's why when the person we're about to honour became the subject of newspaper coverage and criticism from certain people, a lot of phone calls came through to me saying, aren't you outraged as somebody who is the friend of transgender people? And I said, I am the friend of transgender people, and there are many people in the world who are not comfortable inside the bodies in which they've been born and wish to change it. And I am wanting to help people as best I can. But I also believe in freedom of speech, freedom of expression. And I think that Germaine Greer is somebody who is brilliant, exciting, and she is has been for a lifetime a glorious iconoclast in the most positive sense. And so agree with her or disagree with her, but admire her, her guts, her intelligence, her integrity. Would you please salute our iconoclast of the year, Dr. Professor Germaine Greer.
Well now, this is a weird turn of events. Most of the fuss and bother about my attitude to transgender wasn't to do with anything I'd said or done. It was rather to do with things that I wrote years ago. Now, some of you may remember that I wrote a book in 1969 called The Female Eunuch. And what this book argued was that women are born whole people, and that what happens to them as they grow up is that they go through a process of conditioning that turns them into feminine people. Women are not particularly feminine. You know, they have body hair, Kel Surprise. Now the job is to get rid of every bit of it. We used to have to be elite. We were able to leave a bit. Mary Quant had a heart-shaped bit of it left. But now you can't leave any. So we've got 13 and 14-year-olds who are going through torture and spending money they haven't got on being groomed for their little boyfriends, which seems to me utterly undesirable. But there you go. To me, it was important that women understood that femininity was a pose, a posture, a cultural artifact, and that women were something bigger and stronger and more unpredictable, and that what we were trying to do was to reach back to the whole person we were before we learned to talk in a little voice and pretend that we were stupid. And I know people who've won the university medal, one of whom is rather a good broadcaster now, who had to pretend that her field of expertise was football. I nearly called it soccer. You would have all been cross. She couldn't actually have them know that she was the winner of the history medal because they would have been embarrassed, whatever, intimidated. So that I was really talking about this fraud of femininity that women are persuaded to accept. So for me, it's an odd thing that there are men who are unhappy in their current role, even though they've been married and had children and had the unpaid services of a wife. How could they possibly want to do without them? Who are now saying, well, the thing is, I was a woman the whole time. And I just have to say, well, actually, you weren't. You were a man. And you had all the advantages of being a man, and you've still got the advantages of being a man because you're making me talk about you, and I'm actually not interested. So I never actually bought into the fight. I was co-opted for the fight. But then it became ridiculous. I mean, the no platforming and so on. I'm a university teacher. I've been dealing with student uproar for all of my life. And it's nearly always misdirected. It's nearly always about the wrong thing. Occasionally they wake up and tell you something about student loans or about indebtedness. They never think to talk about how poor the services are that they're actually getting at our universities. We have to wait for the Chinese to do that for us. But anyway, I feel in a way that I have kind of nicked this award. I don't want to be recognised for being a reactionary. I'm not. My problem with the whole current system is that it recognises polarised gender, masculine, feminine. These are crippling circumstances for all of us. We are none of us masculine enough and none of us feminine enough. It's a losing battle. We live in the jungle of intersex. Now, you may be surprised to learn that the EU has decided that we haven't got the right anymore with children who are born in this country who have ambiguous genitalia to operate on them as infants and decide whether they'll be boys or girls. And it has been declared that this is unethical. So what have we done about this? We've ignored it. Do you know the only country that's recognised this principle is Malta. I have a very strong feeling about Malta because it's where my father's war was. So gallant little Malta has stuck its head up and said, you're right. What we will do is let our intersexual children remain intersexual till they're old enough to make a decision for themselves. And if they decide that they don't want surgery, they want to remain intersex, that's also an option. Now, everything's going wrong with this story at the moment. An Australian man has said he doesn't want to take his estrogen anymore. So his beard's grown back in. And the people who gave him male identity are saying, you can't be a bearded woman. And he's saying, perfectly logically, because a lot of us have got a bit happening down there, he's saying perfectly logically, there are bearded women all over the world. It's time we grew up on this issue. It's time that we were not so sure of what is masculine and what is feminine and whether it's really what we want. Masculinity is very tough to learn. You have to purge your body and your mind of your mother's milk. This is tough, and it's a tough life to live, to be brave enough, to be a man, to be submissive enough, to be a woman. These are improper expectations of properly developed human beings. So this is where I stand, not simply as a reactionary old biddy who doesn't like the fact I have to share the toilet with people who look a bit peculiar.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much, Jermaine, who's given us a brilliant idea for next year, Bearded Lady of the Year. What an award that will be. I wax, but that's neither here nor there. Let's go from someone who walked out of Big Brother, which I think Jermaine did, for good reasons, to someone who walked into I'm a Celebrity, and as a consequence, into the hearts and minds of the nation that watch I'm a Celebrity. She's an extraordinary character with a wonderful sense of style and life and energy. Her friends know her as Georgie, but the nation now knows her as Lady C. Some of us were brought up on a different kind of Lady C. This is the Lady C for the 21st century. Would you please salute our Jungle Battle Axe of the Year, Lady Colin Campbell?
Well, what can I say? I thought I was not going to be given quite this award. However, I'm going to take a leaf out of the book of many actresses, and I'm going to start by thanking everyone, but with me, I'll start with God. Having thanked God, I will then thank the Oldie and Mike and Craig Brown and Giles Brandreth, who I gather argued for me to be given this wonderful award. And I don't know really what to say, except that I wanted a roof on my house. And since I couldn't afford it, and all my life I have assiduously avoided marrying men for their money, that meant I had to earn it standing up rather than horizontal. So it meant I actually had to go into the jungle and eat real testicles and a real penis. And I even had to eat an actual anus, all of which I did because I thought of my roof. And it certainly has turned out to be a very interesting experience, because once I got out of the jungle, I discovered that actually the average young person really likes me. I mean, I can't go to Tesco now without, it takes an absolute hour to get through with all of the young people wanting selfies, which I think is amazing. And you know what they've decided, why they like me? Because they say I'm sassy. And I think because they have discovered that there's actually somebody who is actually herself. I mean, I remember when I was going into the jungle, Mike was saying to me X, Y, Z, A, B, and C, and I said, you know, I can't be dealing with all of that. I can only be myself. And he said, well, that's the person to be. And it's become a great, actually, honor for me to discover that, in fact, there's a lot to be said for being yourself. And also, I've got to say, the Oldie is a wonderful organization, and it represents a wonderful idea, because in another life, I'm actually a sort of historian. And it slightly concerns me that we in the Western world no longer revere age. And age and the wisdom of age is what all societies should revere. Because the young may have energy, but they do not have experience, and they therefore do not have the knowledge that age brings. And beyond that, all I can say is thank you very much and enjoy.
Lady Colin Campbell there. We're going to stay in the world of television now because we have got a special award for two people who have caught the imagination of the judges. I don't know if any of you see the program called Gogglebox. It's extraordinary. How could this thing work? It's basically proving that the people watching the television are more interesting than the things on the television. And certainly that is the case with these two. They're called Leon and June, and Roger Lewis, writing about them in The Oldie, says, Leon and June are the platonic ideal of a traditional middle-class English couple. Leon's grandparents were immigrants fleeing from Russia, from the pogroms. June is from South Wales. They bicker affectionately, pretend to fall out, actually fall out, disagree, tut-tut with irritation, patch things up, and are deeply in love. Show us your knickers, June, Leon might say, during a boring bit of Countryfile. She may suit the action to the deed, I do not know. Let's just salute our square eyes of the year, Leon and June.
Well, thank you, oldies. I won't try and remember all the names because I'll forget. So can I just say thank you very much for this award. As we arrived today, I was absolutely starstruck. I saw all these people I've been watching on stage, on screen, on television, and thinking, oh, my goodness, why are we here? Well, and of course, because we just watch you all on television, and we make comments, sometimes perhaps not as kind as we might be. But we do enjoy it, and I do agree with some of the sentiments expressed here today that perhaps we should pay a little more attention or give a little more credit to the oldies, because it's true, as Lady C said, we have experience. We mightn't have the energy, although I think she proved all the oldies wrong there. But thank you very much to all the eminent people here today. It's been lovely seeing you all and being part of this this afternoon. Thank you, everyone, very, very much for this wonderful award.
Can I sit down while I say it? You don't know her. Half an hour ago, a young lady sat opposite me, a pretty young girl, and she said she hadn't had anything to eat. So I pointed to a waiter and was attacked by June. You're not supposed to do that. Sit still. You're not doing that. Did you get anything to eat? And I've got another pretty young girl smiling at me. I'll just tell you just a couple of stories. Why I like...
Just one.
Why I like Gogglebox is because I can say what I like. And I do. I remember the first contest we came down for. It was the Trick Awards. And we won it, didn't we? And quickly. Somebody just said quickly to me. Do you want me to go on?
Yes. Right. Of course.
And we won the award. And Channel 4, I've forgotten who it was now, Stephen Lambert said, go on, Leon, be rude. So I went up, thanked them for the award, and told a rude joke, which I'll tell you now. It's not very rude. It's not very rude. No, you don't tell them that, said a voice. A man goes into a pub in Liverpool. I'll say Liverpool. And he orders a pint. And mine host gives him a pint and a whiskey, he said. And he poured the whiskey into his top pocket. Stop me now, have you heard it? No. And this goes on all night. Till the end of the evening, another pint and a whiskey, he says. Pours it in. And the landlord said, "You've had enough now. You're not having any more. I'm sending you out." "What do you mean I can't have any more?" he said. "Right, you, outside," he said to the barman, which in Liverpool means he's going to have a fight. And with that, a mouse popped its head out of his pocket and said, "And bring your bloody cat as well." Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting us.
Well, and congratulations. Well done. Thank you for being here. That's marvellous. Nicholas Parsons is here, and I think he was getting edgy with the bell, but you actually delivered the punchline just in the nick of time. Thank you very much indeed, June and Leon. We now move on to a very special award, this. We salute people for whom they've got to be doing something. Snap in the Celery, what is this is all about. And one of my favorite actors, Robert Hardy, turned 90 last year, and he decided it was time to downsize. So this remarkable actor who has been, again, part of our lives, for all our lives we can remember, who's played Churchill more times than Churchill played Churchill, a great actor, and I interviewed him during the year for the one show about his time at Oxford with Richard Burton at Magdalen in the late 1940s, and he was telling me how he had had to lose so many of his longbows. He's an authority on armaments. You may recall that when the Mary Rose was raised from the deep, it was this man who restored and deciphered, I think, the 138 longbows found within. Last year, the anniversary of the Battle of Agincourt, Agincourt possibly the new name for Ebbsfleet when it's been rebuilt. He is a great man. He got rid of some of his longbows last year, but he has not lost any of his spirit or his sparkle. Would you please salute our Longbowman of the Year and Prince of Downsizing, Robert Hardy.
Thank you very much. I'm deeply honoured to be here, of course. Although I'm no great fan of the oldie, because every time I see it or hear about it, it reminds me that I am old. And I absolutely hate that. I think this award, it's very honorific, but I'm going to transpose it from Longbowman of the Year, which I have been qualified as before, but to my starting and being chairman and instigator of the worldwide Association of Please Don't Shake Hands With Me, which I think is a very good health warning to us all. Don't kiss in public, kiss in private if you must, but take precautions. But don't shake hands, and above all, don't kiss in public. You may get infected with something or other. But please accept my much honoured thanks for this award. I'm very proud to be Longbowman of the Year. I do a great deal with longbows when I'm not selling them, and I tell you, they make no money. So thank you all, and good afternoon. Hey.
To hear the voice alone is enough for us. What a delight. And to have it combined with a health education message. Completely extraordinary. It's not what we expected at all, but health education pioneer of the year, Robert Hardy. We will revise the certificate before it's sent to you. We come now to our penultimate award. There's a joint award that we climax with, but our penultimate award goes to somebody who is quite simply called Witness of the Year. He could have been called Witness of the Year for any year for the past 60 years. He is just one of the most remarkable newsmen of our time. He has seen more of war than anybody else in this room, I imagine. Has been closer to war than almost anybody in this room, except those who have served at the front during the last war and subsequently. He is a remarkable person. his photographs speak. And in an age, catastrophic age, of war, we should salute a witness who is the kind of reporter, most of us come from the world of words, we couldn't do what he has done. He has brought the horror of our times into our homes and has touched our lives. Witness of the year, and of my lifetime certainly, would you please salute a very great photographer, Don McCullin.
It's very embarrassing. First of all, I'm the odd man out here today, really, because photographers were always looked upon in my day as the oily rag in Fleet Street. And when I joined Fleet Street in late 50s, I got the princely sum of 15 guineas a week working at the Observer. And I was so excited. Every time I walked down Fleet Street towards the grimy building of the Observer, which was in Tudor Street, like the guineas, it was a very Dickensian building that never had its windows cleaned. And but I was so proud, and because I came from the kind of background where, you know, there was no education, and my mind wasn't really meant to be working alongside people who had all been to universities, were educated. But I used those people at the end of the day. I traveled with them, and I kind of used them as my tutor. I used to resent the fact that some of them used to, when they were greeting people or people we were supposed to be talking to, photographing, they would say, "Have you met my photographer?" which used to really annoy me. And I used to think, "Sod you, I'm not your photographer, I belong to me." And in those days in Fleet Street, that even the writers were quite conniving. I mean, many of them had been married two or three times because it wasn't conducive lifestyle for marriage and family, and they would fiddle their expenses and be kind of paying for two or three alimonies at the same time. And I thought, what a deceitful bunch of people I'm really, you know, alongside. I was so honored and thrilled to be in the media world, even though I knew my place, so they thought. I was always brought up to say, you know your place. Well, I never believed in that. So I thought, I'm going to work against these people. As much as I loved many of them and I admired them. And so I decided that I was going to go in another direction, my direction. And my first war, I walked into the office and the editor said, "Would you consider going to the civil war in Cyprus?" And I simply levitated because I thought, this is your chance. You know, there was a very famous photographer called Robert Capa who stepped on a mine in Indochina. And there was a vacancy for his laurels, and I thought, I'm going to take it. And I went to the war in civil war in Cyprus with a very wonderful man who sadly was killed in a car accident in Swiss Cottage. And he was the ecclesiastical correspondent who happened to find himself in the middle of the civil war. And he said, in the middle of this great big battle, he said, "You know something, I've got a dinner appointment in Nicosia tonight. Is there any way we can get out of this? I must get out." So I managed to drive him out and came back, and I was alone. And all the very best things in my world in photography, I did alone. I love the journalistic world. They were marvelous people, and I've got many wonderful friends who I miss because I no longer work with in the media, so to speak. I do a lot of freelance stuff. So anyway, I didn't really expect to have to say anything today, but what I'd like to say is I'm very honored to be among such distinguished people in this room, some of whom are my friends from the past Sunday Times days, and it's quite embarrassing to receive awards because I don't deserve it, really, because I enjoyed what I did, and I was speaking, you know, in a kind of humanitarian way with my camera, and it gave me an amazing life, and, you know, for somebody who didn't have an education, I've tried to pick up a bit. But it's the people I've worked with who I've loved and the people I miss. I didn't expect to live to my 80th year. Two wonderful Indian doctors put me together again. And, India is my favorite country, so I'm really proud of the fact I've had another chance. And I think I better stop, really. Thank you very much.
never mind being transgender, I'm a modern conservative, so there's a touch of the Tommy Two Ways about me, in which is extraordinary, because it means I can fancy both Germaine, and now I think I'm really fancying Don McCullen. I mean, I don't know that I've seen a sexier 8-year-old bloke for a while. Anyway, that's just my view. Yeah, exactly, the ladies endorse that. Wow. Anyway, I agree, too much information, let's sweep on. And we sweep on now to our Oldie of the Year award. And we saw all the people that we'd chosen, people like Don, now 80, people like Robert Hardy, now 90. And we realized this whole thing has changed since the Oldie magazine began all those years ago. Oldies aren't oldies at 80 or 90 anymore. Oldie of the Year, it's got to be somebody who is old. And we said, what does old mean? Well, old means at least 100. At least 100. You know, we gave Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, an Oldie of the Year award, and she was pleased to accept it. She was 100. That felt right. You know, it's marvellous for Don, but here to see him swaggering in like that, sort of, you know, it's almost sort of not quite right. So we thought we must find centenarians. And it wasn't difficult. Two centenarians suggested themselves, as it were, simply because they were people who still proved they had snap in their celery. We read last year, or I did, and others on the judging panel had done so, a book called Jeremy Hutchinson's Case Histories. It was a Sunday Times bestseller. This was the story of an advocate who took part in some of the key cases of our time, cases that in many ways have formed the society in which we now live, famous cases from the late 1950s and early 1960s. But when we began to discover what his life story was, he'd gone on to the House of Lords, the kind of causes he'd supported, reading this book, we thought this is a truly remarkable man. And we then found that not only was he alive, but he was well. And last night I got an email from a friend of his. Some of you will know her, Juliet Nicholson. And I said, I'm seeing this man tomorrow. And she sent me this email saying, well, of course you're giving an award to this man. He is irresistible in hugeness of heart and scintillatingness of mind to everyone who meets him. And it's not just oldies who cherish him as one of their own, but the youngies find his intellectual energy, his professional daring, completely seductive. He simply celebrates human nature, revels in it, is fascinated by it, and continues to defend the accused who are falsely accused, the misrepresented, with all the energy he can muster. He finds interest, amusement, and joy in almost everyone he speaks to, even those who are a century younger than himself. He even finds the occasional boring person interesting just because they're so unusually boring. He is a life enhancer, a treasure, a miracle, and 101 years of age in March. Would you please salute our joint Oldie of the Year, Baron Hutchinson of Lullington, QC?
I think you've had enough. But what I really wanted to say was that everybody here knows about the aging process. Everybody here knows the gradual deterioration. But if you're very old and you reach the age of 90, everything changes. When I retired from my profession, nobody took the slightest interest in me. There was an audible sigh of relief at the judiciary at the Old Bailey. But apart from that, silence. But when you're 90, suddenly you become of interest. And people come up and ask you curious questions. And you soon realize not only are you an object of interest, but you can say whatever you like, and everybody believes you. And for instance, the other day, a gentleman approached me and said, oh, I've been looking at your book, and I see you were sunk in the Mediterranean. I had to swim for your life, and you were serving under Lord Nelson. Do tell me, was he as small as everybody says he was? And so one looks grave, nods one's head. Yes, indeed he was. And, of course, he was always being seasick. And they go away pleased. And the last one who came up was a lady came up to me, an eager lady, and she said to me, I see that in 1945 you canvassed 10 Downing Street on behalf of the Labour Party. It must have been very exciting knocking on that famous door. So I said, well, it was exciting, but you know, the interesting door is the back door. Oh, she said, really? I said, have you never seen the back door? No. Well, it's very small, and of course you have to have a code to be able to enter it. And when you get inside, there's a little circular staircase which goes up to the Prime Minister's flat. And when you get to the top, on the left is a door into the kitchen, on the right is a door into the bedroom. She said, how terribly interesting. How do you know all this? I said, oh, well, I got to know it very well when I was having my short fling with Blessed Margaret in 1980s. And she goes away, believing every word. And of course, the fact of the matter is that none of you here know whether that story is true or false. Well, anyway, being very, very old has its compensations, as you see. And the last compensation, of course, is being given this lovely honour from the oldie. And I'm very, very grateful to receive it. And I can say, without it being obviously a marathon, I shall treasure it for the rest of my life.
Wow. Now you are glad you came, aren't you? My goodness, you don't get a speech from a 101-year-old as good as that every week. Quite extraordinary. But we are an Equal Opportunities magazine, and having awarded something to Jeremy, we thought we must find somebody of the female gender, because we were honouring Jermaine as well. And so we thought, who are we going to give this to? And Roger Lewis, one of the judging panel, who is a great biographer of actors, among others, wonderful book about Laurence Olivier, a lot in it about Vivien Leigh, suggested to us Olivia de Havilland. And we thought, Olivia de Havilland, we remember Olivia de Havilland. Oh, how wonderful. We remember her in all those Errol Flynn films. I think there were 8 of them. We remember her in The Heiress. We remember Olivia de Havilland, but she's no longer with us, is she? Oh! She is with us. She is going to be 100 years of age at the beginning of July. And so on our behalf, Roger Lewis has formed a relationship with Olivia de Havilland. The things people will do for the oldie. His long-suffering wife, Anna, has actually been quite pleased to have somebody else taking the strain for a while. And Roger has been channeling his inner Errol Flynn and communicating. And that takes some doing, because the communication lines have dulled over the years. And he has formed a relationship with Olivia de Havilland. She was very happy to come and be here at the top table. But we thought, no, Jeremy is not going to be... There's going to be nobody better than Jeremy to speak. You're a woman from the silver screen. We want you on the silver screen. And so, ladies and gentlemen, The reason we're giving her this award is here is a lady who has accepted our award. Here she is. Yeah, this is the kind of selfie that Olivia de Havilland takes, Don. You noticed how coyly Roger managed to place a couple of Oscars behind her. He brought the roses. He gave her the award. This is Olivia de Havilland. And she's getting the award for being 100 years of age, being still brilliant, still beautiful, and most of all, as you're about to discover, still having snap in her celery. Olivia de Havilland, Joint Oldie of the Year.
Dear, dear Roger Lewis, I am utterly delighted to learn that you and your fellow judges deem that there is sufficient snap in my celery to justify my receiving the 2016 Oldie of the Year Award. It is deeply gratifying to thus find myself in the company of the Queen Mother, whose record I have long wanted to match, as well as in that of so many other distinguished recipients. How I wish I could be present at the gala luncheon in London on Tuesday the 2nd of February 2016. But I must confess to you that despite the briskness of my celery, I should not even dream of journeying to England and back to France for even so notable an occasion as the one to which you have invited me. With warmest regards to the chairman of the judges, to yourself, and to your fellow judges who have so kindly chosen me as the recipient of the current Oldie Award. Most appreciatively, Olivia de Havilland.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the lunch. We salute the judges, we salute you. Keep the snap in your celery. Goodbye, thank you, and we'll hope to see you next year.